Welcome back. You're listening to Voices of the Middle East with your host, Gudarz Ektedari. My guest tonight is Professor William Beeman. He's Director of Middle East Studies at Brown University and a visiting professor at Stanford. He also is the author of a forthcoming book, The Great Satan Versus the Bad Mullahs, How the United States and Iran Demonize Each Other. Before the break, we were talking about Iran and U.S. relation, and also the nuclear activities that Iran has. And now I want to just announce the phone numbers. If people have any questions, they can call in at 503-231-8187. Again, it's 503-231-8187. You're welcome to call in and ask your question from Professor Beeman. Next month, Dr. Beeman, will be the elections in Iran. And how do you see things are working out there with, I guess the last news was the entering of Mr. Rafsanjani, the former president of Iran. This balance of power between reformists and conservatives, do you have any opinion on that?
You know, the the group of candidates that's presented themselves for the presidential election is, in fact, a very weak selection of candidates. And I think that the reason for the weak group of candidates has to do with the parliamentary elections that took place last year. In the parliamentary elections, again, the Guardian Council disqualified 2,300 candidates from the field of candidates. And this more or less guaranteed that there would be a conservative victory in the parliament and in the election. The candidates for the presidency who might have supported the reform agenda, I believe, have just simply not come forward because they feel that they're likely to be eliminated anyway, and they are discouraged. Mr. Rafsanjani is a very curious individual. He's been involved with Iranian politics ever since the very beginning of the revolution, and he's served two terms as president already. He was, I believe, Speaker of Parliament, and he also has been heading up this mediation council, the Expediency Council, which is supposed to mediate between the chief jurisprudent, Mr. Khamenei, and the Council of Guardians and the Iranian Parliament. So in some ways, he's a very clever and very experienced political operative within Iran. My feeling is that in having declared his candidacy, he immediately becomes the most prominent candidate. He's the person that everybody is likely to know. And he's not particularly well-liked by everyone in Iran, but I think that he has an extremely good chance of being elected president again.
And this goes back with your question, with your comments before, that the problem is the constitution in Islamic Republic that allows the Guardian Council to kind of filter candidates. And the election you mentioned last February of 2004, the election of parliament, was actually a disappointing event for Iranian people and kind of discouraged them from participation. And with all account, there won't be a large participation in the next election of the president, which is going to be on, I think, the third week of June of this year.
I thought it was the 16th of June, but maybe you're right.
No. It might be correct. I don't know exact date, but I know it was like 1 month after the opening of the registration, which was this Monday.
Yeah, that's correct. You know, when the Constitution was established, it was established in the middle of the hostage crisis, and Iran was under threat, or it was perceived to be under threat by the Iranian population from the United States, and the hostage crisis was a very dramatic event. And the people who constructed the government of the Islamic Republic were, I believe, they were people of goodwill. Their principal purpose was to make sure that there were no laws passed that contradicted Sharia law. And the Guardian Council was designed to be a group of wise and revered scholars who would be like mujtahids and would essentially have a test for any law that came forward. And they've turned out to be far more conservative in their judgment than I think anyone had ever anticipated. So it has been a very difficult situation for making laws and legal reforms that accord with the modern age. So it is really, I think, time, and I think that the Iranian people know that it's time to rethink this particular feature of government. We still want, I think that most Iranians don't want a system that completely ignores the laws of Islam. But at the same time, I think that they find this essentially unelected body of people to be too heavy-handed.
Well, There are some speculation, actually, within Iranian diaspora that if Masroor Rafsanjani becomes president, and he has promised, actually, during this campaign or pre-campaign, I should say, that he's the only person who can resolve problems with U.S. And in the past, few years after, the Bush administration, there has been some contact in not officially or publicly, but there has been some contacts in between people of his camp and conservatives in administration. Do you see any suggest? I mean, can anybody speculate any relation to improve with Rafsanjani and the conservatives?
Mr. Rafsanjani, you know, our memories are very short, but Mr. Rafsanjani was the principal person in the Iranian government during the Iran-Contra affair.
Exactly.
And the same people, people like Oliver North and Michael Ledeen and this very strange Iranian Ghorbanifar, who was the broker for the Iran-Contra affair, are still around. You know, they're still in government. They are the beginnings of the neoconservative movement. And so, in some ways, Mr. Rafsanjani is associated, I guess, historically with the neoconservatives. And so, I think there is some substance to what he says about him having the contacts with the U.S. government that might allow him to actually talk to them. At the risk of sounding too vulgar to your audience, I should say that Mr. Rafsanjani is no longer a virgin when it comes to politics, and so he has nothing to lose, really. I think that the people in Iran have seen him do everything possible already in his political life, and somehow he has managed to survive. So I don't think that that he has to worry about his political reputation, actually, in the future. He's already shown himself to be capable of just about every kind of political action.
And contrary, I mean, I guess in U.S. administration, we have seen also the same pattern and the kind of comment that I heard from, Condoleezza Rice and other people related to administration commenting about these nuclear discussion between European Union and Iran, and they all said, well, U.S. is not going to be involved until after the election in Iran. And that kind of is another affirmation of that suggestion. It may be really that's what's going to happen.
Yes, it could be. And my only hope is that the only thing that would really make it difficult for any politician, not just Rafsanjani, but any politician in Iran, is if they become so associated with the United States that they that it becomes thought that they are somehow the tool of the United States or in the pocket of the United States. And that would immediately make it difficult for them to do anything within Iran, because the Iranians remember the fact that the United States was instrumental in the Mossadegh affair already back in the 1950s, in 1952, in which Prime Minister Mossadegh was deposed and the Shah was reinstalled as an American ally.
Another interesting issue is that for a period of time, people were saying, well, U.S. is now surrounding Iran by going to Afghanistan and Central Asia and Caspian area and then Iraq and having military forces in Persian Gulf. Now it appears that the table is kind of being reversed and U.S. needs Iran more than Iran needs U.S. for establishing Afghanistan and especially Iraq. What is your opinion on that?
There's no question that Iran actually, I believe, has behaved extremely well with regard to both Afghanistan and Iraq. Iran could have done all kinds of things that would have frustrated the American operations in both of those countries. And it has it's remained actually very calm and measured in the way that it's treated that situation, even though, as you point out, Iran itself has been surrounded by the United States in these other areas. And we also, the United States has these air bases in Central Asia and has a very strong interest in supporting the current government in Azerbaijan on Iran's northern border. So so Iran actually was, of course, very helpful to the United States during the ouster of the Taliban. Actually, the United States and Iran had common interests in seeing the Taliban eliminated from Afghanistan. But there is no question that that Iran has behaved very well in that regard. So it is in the United States' interests that Iran not be antagonized. There's potentially at least a million soldiers available in Iran, and the United States doesn't have any kind of forces that could counter a military operation if Iran was hostile to the United States.
As I understand, Dr. Beeman, you are having a book coming out pretty soon. Do you want to say a few words on the book, The Great Satan?
The Great Satan versus the Mad Mullahs, which you've already mentioned, how the United States and Iran demonize each other. It's being published by Prager, which is an imprint of Greenwood Press, and it's already available for sale on the Greenwood Press website. I think it's www.greenwood.com. But it hasn't been released yet, so anybody who goes to that site and makes the purchase of the book will get it as soon as it's released. But I'm trying to deal with the fact that the United States and Iran, for the last 30 years, have been enemies of each other. But for the most part, ever since the Iranian Revolution, both Iran and the United States haven't really done much damage to each other. There hasn't been any real threat. It's mostly been a war of words. The Iran-Iraq war is perhaps an exception, and if we all know that that an Iran Air jetliner was shot down during the Iran-Iraq war, and the United States never apologized for that. And the American economic sanctions against Iran have been very difficult. But for the most part, neither side has really suffered tremendously as a result of not having diplomatic relations with the other. But they have insulted each other continually during this period of time. And what is interesting, and the reason the title of the book comes up the way that it does, is that the Great Satan is a term that Iran has used against the United States, and the notion of their being a theocratic rule in Iran by mad mullahs is the insult that the United States has used against Iran. And of course, neither of those slogans is really completely true at all. But they really make a very good kind of rhetorical pose for the domestic populations of both countries. So it's easy for the Iranian leaders who want to have an enemy in the United States for domestic consumption to talk about the Great Satan, and it's very easy for American leaders to talk about mad mullahs in Iran. My hope is that by analyzing these images and showing how insubstantial they are, that we may be able to get beyond this war of words and really come to the rapprochement that I think is really inevitable for Iran and the United States. Actually, Iran and the United States have many, many common interests, and the fact that the United States characterizes Iran the way that it does gets in the way of seeing that the Iranian population, the public, is actually very progressive and needs the support of the international community in order to make the kinds of progressive moves that they need toward greater freedom and better government for everyone.
Well, I have a caller online. I don't know if you have a question, but let's get him online and see. A caller, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Oh, okay. During going clear back to Nixon administration, Richard Nixon and Henry Kissinger were able to open a dialogue with China. At that time, there was pretty hostile relation was between both countries, and what they did along with the Chinese leaders, Mao Tse-tung and I can't think of the other leader right now.
Xiaoping.
Okay, well, what they did was they decided that they would just agree to disagree on all the stuff they disagreed on and try to find something, you know, that could bring the two countries in common. And I remember one of the things was, I mean, this may sound trivial to you, but they started a cultural exchange, and one of them was ping pong. They found out that Chinese like to play ping pong, and so did the people in the U.S. So we started having matches, you know, like U.S. teams would go to China, Chinese teams come over here, and then they started doing it with art and music. And I would think that something like that between the two countries, trying to find things that are in common, would be a good start.
Dr. Bailey, your comments?
I completely agree with you that that cultural exchange is absolutely essential if the United States and Iran are to try to settle their historic differences. And the fact is that that there is a lot that can be done in the area of cultural exchange. It's been very difficult, however, for American citizens to travel to Iran in a serious way. Anybody can go as a tourist, by the way. It's quite easy. And many Americans, in fact, are going to Iran as tourists, and they have a wonderful time. It's been more difficult for Iranian scholars and artists and intellectuals to come to the United States. Because there's no diplomatic relations, it's possible to get visas to come to the United States, but it's extremely difficult. And the economic embargo has been leveled against Iran was supposed to specifically exclude educational and cultural exchanges, but our Treasury Department has not interpreted it that way, and so it has been very difficult. But I thank you for that suggestion, which I completely and totally agree with.
Thank you, Dr. Beeman. We are getting too close to the end of the show tonight, and I would like to first appreciate your time. I know it's kind of late night in Washington, D.C., where we are talking to you now. But I also hope that we can arrange for maybe your book tour to come to Portland. And I know next week you will be speaking at the University of Washington in Seattle.
That's correct. I'll be speaking in the University of Washington in Seattle in the evening. I think it's 7:30, and I think that it's pretty easy at the university website to find the time and place of the lecture.
It's part of
if anybody happens to be in Seattle, I'd be delighted to see them.
It's part of the Jackson School of International Studies at University of Washington. And with that, I would like to thank you very much and hope to have a chance to talk to you again.
I hope I can visit all of you in Portland.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
نیدهم که عزم سفر میکنی مکان مهری عریف و یار دگر می کنی مکان. تو در جهان غریبی بو هزت چه می کنی؟ خستی کدام خسته جگر می کنی مکان؟ از ما مدوزد خیش و ببگانگان مرو، دزدی دستوی غیر نظر می کنی مکان. ای ما که چرخ زیر و زبر از برای تو، مارو خراب و زیر و زبر میکنی مکان. ای برتر از وجود قدم پایم ار تو را، از خطه وجود گذر میکنی مکان.